This is an ABC podcast.
You're listening to The Country Hour on ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill.
Hello and welcome to The Country Hour this Friday. I'm Isabella Pittaway. For our Metro listeners, we will take you back to the world today soon, but we're standing by to bring you a press conference with the Prime Minister. Now, coming up this hour, truck drivers who are trying to bring us essential goods are being denied access to basic services because of coronavirus shutdowns.
It is a worrying trend when interstate truck drivers can't even get access to basic facilities such as toilets and showers for the fear that other people have of catching COVID-19.
Plus, will interstate fly-in, fly-out workers be subject to 14-day isolation periods? And how are mine sites dealing with physical distancing? The South Australia Chamber of Mines and Energy will answer those questions. But before then, the Federal Agriculture Minister, David Littleproud, has this morning confirmed that livestock sale yards and wool auctions will be able to continue because they're an essential part of the agriculture supply chain. Now, some store sales have already been cancelled in Victoria. And in South Australia, meetings have been held about the future of sales, including at the Dublin sale yards. Andrew Lepley is the manager of the SA Livestock Exchange. Good afternoon, Andrew.
Good afternoon. How are we?
Not too bad, thanks. Now, what have you decided about next week's sales?
Next Tuesday morning, our gates will have will be manned by security. There'll be four guys there that are all local fellas that know all the meat buyers and of such. So basically, we have drawn up a list of meat buyers who will be the only ones that will be able to gain access to the buying lanes in the sheep and lamb market and the cattle market. And if you're not on that list, the security guys will be telling you to go home.
So how many people are you expecting to be at the sale yards next Tuesday?
Well, the buying lists are, I think, just off the top of my head, I think there's 20 on the sheep and lamb list and about 18 on the cattle list. We're having no calf market next week, so we've suspended the calf market. So the farmers that only want to buy one or two calves, they won't be there to buy anyway, so there'll be no need for them to come. Those lists, on top of that, we'll have the agents, so they'll probably, each selling agent will have four or five nominated people that they'll have there. Carriers, of course, will be able to access the yards because they need to shift the stock. And then our own drovers and contractors, which will be, I think there's about eight or nine of those guys. So if you tally it all up, we shouldn't have any more than probably 30 guys on site at any one time, I wouldn't have thought.
Andrew, was this a hard decision to make?
Extremely, yeah. Now, it's been brought about mainly through social distancing, which is, I think, everybody's biggest problem, including the general public when they're walking down the street. They still seem to be walking shoulder to shoulder. So that's our biggest issue. So we need to have as minimum number of people in those laneways as we can possibly get. So if we can't succeed in doing that, well, our future might change.
Have you had to make any other precautions for next week in terms of spacing or anything like that?
Yeah, we'll be certainly trying to space out the livestock. So for instance, we'll be trying to have an empty pen in between each lot to give buyers more room to maintain their social distancing, and other things along those lines that we'll be putting into place as well. So,
I'm speaking to Andrew Lepley, who is the manager of SA Livestock Exchange. Andrew, I know you said before that it was an extremely hard decision to make. Do you also think it's going to be hard for some people because sale yards really play an important role in the mental health of communities and often are an opportunity for people living in rural areas to catch up as well?
Oh, exactly. And they are the community hub, really, for a lot of areas. So we have a lot of guys that have been sale yard attendees for 10 years on end and haven't missed a week, you know. So those guys will be wondering what the hell's going on. But anyway, it is what it is. And if we don't all pull together and do the right thing, well, we're only going to cut our own throats. So tough decisions have to be made, and this is how we'll try and do it.
And I'm guessing, Andrew, probably one of the strangest things you've had to do in your time as working with the SA Livestock Exchange.
Definitely, yeah. No doubt about that. Like, I'm a 58-year-old man, and I don't think I've come across anything like this before in my life. I think the last disaster that I had anything to do was when we were slaughtering sheep back in the early 80s. So, yeah, this is certainly a life changer for sure.
And Andrew, I know you said the market is going ahead next Tuesday, but no more than 30 people there. Are you expecting that there could be potential further restrictions in place?
Well, it certainly won't get easier in the short term. Yeah, it could get tougher. The list might get shortened. Who knows? But I know one thing: if it's not done right next Tuesday, it'll have to be renegotiated from there on in, I would have thought.
Andrew, thanks so much for your time today.
No worries at all. Thank you.
That's Andrew Lepley, the manager of SA Livestock Exchange. So there you go. The Dublin market's still going ahead next Tuesday, but gates will be manned by security. You need to be on that list to attend those cattle and sheep sales. And the Narra Court sale yards are also planning to hold their sales next week, but a final decision won't be made until Monday. It is 12 past 12, and for our Metro listeners, sorry we've had to take you away from the world today, but we're standing by to bring you a press conference with the Prime Minister. Now, panic buying, we've seen a lot of it. Combine that with the impacts of drought, and it sent ginger prices soaring to as much as $45 a kilogram in the shops as buyers stock up on the antioxidant and anti-inflammatory rich rhizome. Australian Ginger Growers Association President Shane Templeton told Jennifer Nichols that it's a shot in the arm for the industry after a tough 12 months. And even though growers are getting around a third of that amount, the price is unprecedented.
Yes, it is. So I guess, like, with the drought and also with what's happened with the panic buying, there has definitely been a spike in the price.
So of that $45 that we're seeing in the shop, how much of that is actually getting to growers?
The price that you see in a retail shop is definitely not what growers receive.
So roughly what price a kilo are you commanding for fresh ginger at the moment?
For fresh ginger and our quote new season, because that is what I'm sending the most of, we're receiving sort of around about that $15 a kilo at the present stage. The old season ginger, which is becoming quite like we're shifting really from one crop to another, that does have a higher price as well. So it is well up into the $20 a kilo. 6 months ago, we were getting sort of somewhere around about as low as $4 and even just dipping into the high $3 per kilo. So, yeah, it has changed around. Like, we are probably getting now probably four times the amount of that price last year at the present stage.
And how important has that been to you, considering how tough things have been financially for growers?
Yeah, last year we were, like at one stage there, we had probably dropped to break-even point and even just starting to dip under it. And also with the drought, like, people's yields are down. So, of course, their break-even point goes a little bit higher again. So having this little bit of a spike has certainly started to put a little bit of money back into growers' pockets. And also, because we are now having to do the spatial distancing in our workplace, it has made us, like, have to do extra costs to actually make like a safe workplace for our employees. So we've got a few extra costs associated in there now too. So we do need a little bit higher price as well.
So I'm trying to imagine, Shane Templeton, I've been to your production shed before. It's usually people in quite close quarters standing along a line. What does it look like now?
Yeah, what we've had to do along our line is actually pull every second person out so that we can gain that 1.5 metre spacing. We've gone back to an old system where we used to use what we call drying trays, and we've spread them out around our shed more so that people do have that distancing. But look, we're looking at it almost the same as the government. We're nearly looking at it daily, weekly to say, where can we improve and where can we do better and things like that. But look, I'm very proud of my staff at the moment because they've taken it on. We're all pleased that we do have a job and things like that. So we're working very hard to do it correctly for everyone.
On that front of jobs, there has been some concern nationally that there won't be enough people to work on farms. What's been your experience so far?
My experience so far is the opposite. Like every day we have had no less than 30 calls or people actually turning up to our workplace saying, do you have any work? So far it is not an issue. One thing that concerns me greatly is backpackers that are here in Australia and are pretty much stuck in Australia now. They cannot line up for Social Security to actually get a weekly payment. If they don't have work, I'm just not sure where their money's going to come from to buy food. So that probably concerns me more than me being able to get employees, because at this stage, yeah, we're getting a lot of phone calls and obviously I'm turning a lot of people away.
That's Australian Ginger Growers Association President Shane Templeton.
This is the Country Hour on ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill.
It's 17 past 12 this Friday. Great to have your company. Moving away from coronavirus for a moment, and look, it's not going to be super cheap, but the price of water in the Southern Murray-Darling Basin is expected to fall next year. Government forecaster ABES has crunched the numbers based on a few different weather scenarios. If it's wet, it says you can expect water could sell for less than $300 per megalitre. Here's ABES spokesman David Galliano.
We are forecasting prices for next year to be anywhere between that sort of high $200 per megalitre under the wet scenario up to up around $775 per megalitre under the extreme dry scenario. It is obviously very early days, so you know the numbers can change quite a lot between now and then, but this gives us an early idea of what might happen to prices next year.
Okay, so a best case scenario situation might be coming in at just under $300 a megalitre on average across the Southern Basin.
That's correct, yeah. And when you say best case, that's sort of at the top 10% in terms of rainfall. Of course, it could be even wetter than that, in which case prices would be even lower. But our current wet scenario, that's what it is, it's 10%.
And what is the intel from the Bureau about just how wet it could be?
Pretty neutral, I suppose. So there sort of hasn't been a bob each way, really. It's pretty neutral for being, wetter than mean or drier than mean. So, you know, if you're a betting person, you might say, well, it might end up being an average kind of scenario, in which case we've got prices around that sort of $450 per megalitre under an average type scenario.
So could you put this into some sort of context and say how things were lining up this time last year?
So compared to last year, I'll give you actually the numbers for this current financial year, current water year. So the total amount of water really available for irrigation for this year, so for 1920, it's about 3,500 gigalitres across the entire Southern Basin. And moving into the next water year, so 2021, again, depending on the scenario, but under the extreme dry scenario, we're saying that's going to go down to about 1,700 gigalitres, whereas under the really wet scenario, we're saying that could go up to about 5,500 gigalitres. And a good reference point, I suppose, is during the worst of the millennium drought, so back around that sort of 2008 time, there was something like 2,500 gigalitres available for irrigation. So our estimates for next year, there is quite a lot of rain, and that just reflects the early days we are where we are, and there's quite a bit of uncertainty.
So things are looking okay in terms of how things have been in the past little while, but it doesn't sound like you're too sure of anything.
Well, that's the problem with what we've got now at the moment. We're a fair way out from 2021. Depending on what scenario pans out, prices could be quite different. I guess one thing we can say is that even under the wettest scenario that we've modelled here, we're not going to see prices drop down to, you know, $10, $20, $50, or even $100 per megalitre. And that's off the back of a run of fairly dry years, so storages are quite low. So even if we do get a lot of rain, we're still saying prices are going to be reasonably high next quarter year.
That's David Galliano from ABES speaking with Kath Sullivan about its latest outlook for the water market. Still to come on the Country Hour, we'll head off to the Weather Bureau because they've also got the climate outlook for the next few months. And it's actually looking quite positive, which is good. We need some good news these days. But right now, let's find out what's coming up on Landline this Sunday.
This week on Landline, drought and water reform have led to the second smallest Australian rice crop ever. And meet the artist capturing the land coming back to life after the devastating bushfires.
I'm amazed that it's recovering and it can recover the way it does. But I'm concerned that these fires are getting hotter and longer and more often. And I wonder how long it can keep recovering.
That's Landline, 12:30 Sunday on ABC TV.
You're listening to The Country Hour on ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill.
It's 21 past 12. Isabella Pittaway is my name. Let's head off to the Weather Bureau now, and it's good afternoon to senior forecaster Brett Gage. Hi, Brett.
Hi, Isabella.
What's happening as we head into the weekend?
Yeah, well, why don't we start off with what's happened over March first? We're not really quite to the end of March, but just for some preliminary look at what's happened. Rainfall was generally below average in the central and eastern agricultural districts, but it was above average on the west coast, and it was a very wet month in the northeast of South Australia. That was due to one system, ex-tropical cyclone Esther, which moved a lot of rain, heavy rain, into the northeast pastoral and neighbouring areas of Queensland and New South Wales. It was the wettest March for more than 10 years in those northeastern parts of the state. But large areas of the state, extending from the northwest right down to the southeast, had less than 40% of their March average rainfall. Now, the long-term three-monthly climate outlook is looking not too bad. We're looking at around average rainfall up in the northeast of the state, but above average rainfall elsewhere. This is for the period April through to June, and it's looking even perhaps well above average out over the Nullarbor Plain there. We're seeing some evidence of that already. The last rain band that came across there dumped 30 millimetres on Nullarbor. So perhaps those western parts of the state might fare all right for the remainder of autumn and the first part of winter. Temperature-wise, maximum temperatures, they're looking like a near average, but above average up in the northeast corner for the next 3 months. But going back to our 7 day forecast now. We've got a large high pressure system centred just east of Tasmania, and there's a trough of low pressure up in the far northwest corner of the state. That could generate a shower or thunderstorm only right up in that far northwest corner today. Otherwise, it will be fine. We did have some early morning fog patches around the southeastern districts, Kangaroo Island, and the far west coast this morning. As we move into tomorrow, that high will move further away, and we'll have a cold front, which will move across the far west of the state in the evening. But before that, a fine and mostly sunny day over most parts, with just light to moderate northerly winds. A great day to get out on the boat if you want to, isolate even further. So, good day to go out there. Sunday, not so good. That front will move across western and southern parts of the state and should reach a line near Oodnadatta to Renmark in the late evening. And we'd be looking at pretty fresh and gusty north to northwest winds ahead of the front. Should bring some areas of raised dust to the eastern Eyre Peninsula, the southeast of the northwest pastoral, and the Flinders and mid-north districts. So, a bit dusty up there. But otherwise, the front should extend a slight chance of showers across the agricultural area and the south of the pastoral districts, reaching a medium chance about southern coasts. And then as we move into Monday, that front will move through the northeast corner of the state, a ridge of high pressure moving in fairly quickly behind it, which will bring some areas of fog over Eyre Peninsula in the morning. And otherwise, conditions will be fine across the state, apart from just a slight chance of a shower about the south of the lower southeast. Then as we move into Tuesday, we've got a rain band moving into the far west of the state, but mainly fine conditions elsewhere, apart from areas of morning fog across the agricultural area. So, cumulative rainfall totals until midnight Tuesday, generally less than 2 millimetres, possibly reaching 2 to 5 millimetres about southern coast, and some falls of 2 to 10 millimetres in the far west of the northwest pastoral with that rain. Then looking at our longer term outlook for Wednesday through to Friday, that rain should extend across most of the state. Falls are likely to be a bit higher in the pastoral districts than in the agricultural area, but nonetheless it should cover a fairly large area. And we've also got possible thunderstorms north of about Roxby Downs on the Wednesday, and then that rain will contract to the east and clear during Thursday. But then it's looking like a significant front might move across the state during Friday. So showers extending across the agricultural area on Friday and even up into the south of the pastoral district. So I think the second half of next week is certainly looking better for some precipitation.
And Brett, just very briefly, what will the next 3 months hold rainfall-wise for South Australia? Because it is getting closer to the seeding window for much of the state.
Yeah, I did cover that at the start of our broadcast. So that was the three-month climate outlook for the rainfall.
Brett, thanks very much. That's Brett Gage at the Weather Bureau. Let's look at the far west of New South Wales now. And for the Upper Western District, tomorrow is going to be a mostly sunny day. There'll be a slight chance of a shower or thunderstorm in the east in the morning and afternoon. Overnight, temperatures will drop to between 17 and 21, and then they'll reach around 30 degrees. And then for the Lower Western District, tomorrow will be a mostly sunny day. Overnight, it's going to be a little bit cooler, between 15 and 18 degrees, and then during the day, getting up to around 30. So definitely looking a bit warm this weekend, and hopefully some rain on the way next week. Still to come on the Country Hour. We know how crucial truck drivers are. They're bringing us lots of essential goods. When you go shopping to pick up your toilet paper or your pasta or your fresh produce, how's it got in there? It's got in there because of a truck driver. But unfortunately, they're not seeing access to basic services at truck stops because of coronavirus shutdowns. So we'll be looking into that. And also, we're going to be talking about the mining sector and hearing some of the precautions that they're taking, and whether or not FIFO workers have to be restricted to 14 days in quarantine.
You're listening to The Country Hour. For more stories from across the country, go to abc.net.au/rural. On ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill, this is Isabella Pittaway. Isabella Pittaway.
Hello. Thank God it's Friday, hey? Coming up this half hour, while many businesses are in the process of reducing staff, Macro Meats is expanding its wild boar, kangaroo and venison meat businesses. But when it comes to food handling, you can't be too careful.
We're almost like an airport now. You walk through an area and if there's any elevated temperatures, it'll come up on a screen and then we will bring that person aside. Besides that, several times a day we're taking temperatures. We've got sanitizer everywhere.
You'll hear what their expansion plans are soon. Plus, an Australian camel tour operator has come home to a pleasant surprise in their garden bed in the middle of Australia. If you'd like to guess what you think the surprise was, 0467 922 891. You can also call us on 1300 222 891. Right now, though, it's just after 12:30. Let's get the latest with news headlines. It's good afternoon to Ben Nielsen.
Happy Friday, Isabella. Making news, a school bus driver in South Australia's Riverland has tested positive to COVID-19. Glossop High School will not close, but it's contacted anyone who might need to self-isolate. And Breast Screen SA will suspend its services for at least 3 months as a precautionary measure. South Australian authorities will not take any action against two American tourists who absconded before receiving test results for COVID-19, even though Health Minister Stephen Wade says they could be criminally liable. Preparations are underway to remove hundreds of passengers from a German cruise ship docked at Fremantle in WA. The Artania had been off the coast since some passengers tested positive to coronavirus. Overseas, the United States has overtaken China as the country with the most cases of coronavirus, with more than 83,000 confirmed. Italy has the highest death toll, 8,200 people. And to other news, South Australian career conman 77-year-old Robert Wayne Collins has been jailed for at least 4 years for ripping off 7 people as part of a New York City property investment scam. He spent $182,000 of the scammed money to buy 2 luxury cars for himself and his wife. More news, Isabella, at 1 o'clock.
Thanks very much, Ben. It is 28 minutes to 1, and we are bringing you some good news this half hour as well, because I've got a great story coming up for you about an Australian camel tour operator who went away for a bit and they came home to a rather pleasant surprise in their garden bed in the middle of Australia. And I'm taking your guesses today. Margaret has called 1300 222 891. Hi, Margaret.
Yeah, hello.
What do you think was in their garden bed when they came back?
I'm thinking it might be a baby camel.
Oh, I wish that was the answer now, Margaret. Oh. That's not quite what it was. I wish it was, because that would have been a lovely surprise,
yeah,
wouldn't it?
Yes.
Wonderful.
That's not right then.
No, not quite, Margaret, but thanks for your guess.
Thank you.
1300 222 891 if you'd like to guess what they found in their garden bed. Remembering that it is, the middle of Australia, it can be quite hard to grow things in central Australia. You can also have a guess on the text line 0467 922 891. Now, let's talk about South Australia's mining sector now, because SA's mining industry is preparing for tougher travel restrictions, which could make it harder to source workers. Currently, South Australia's mining industry can bring in workers from interstate without needing them to self-isolate for 2 weeks. However, South Australia Chamber of Mines and Energy CEO Rebecca Knoll says the industry is preparing for changes in response to the coronavirus.
So The restrictions have interrupted, obviously, the flow of personnel, particularly FIFO, fly-in, fly-out, and DIDO, drive-in, drive-out personnel to our sites. South Australia has a lot of support in its resources sector from other states. We have some mine sites that are serviced by Western Australia, predominantly from Western Australia, others that are serviced predominantly from Queensland, and we do have a lot of people in our resources community that live in other states. So inevitably, when the borders were closed, there was an interruption to that flow of workers. However, the government here in South Australia has worked very effectively to bring in place rules around who can travel and how they can travel, and the industry is seeking to respond to that as quickly as possible. The key thing is ensuring that workers have the appropriate disclosures on them to indicate who they're working for and what they're doing. So we are trying to normalise in this crazy COVID world. We're trying to normalise things as we go.
So if workers, say, come in from another state, do they still have to self-isolate for 2 weeks?
Initially, the advice was that they did have to self-isolate for 2 weeks if they'd come in on Sunday, for instance. However, we now can integrate them into our workforces without isolation, assuming that, of course, they're not showing any signs of either being in contact with somebody with COVID-19 or showing any signs of having it. A lot of extra precautions are being put in place by operating entities as well. Temperature checking is one of those, and we are quite fortunate here in South Australia that servicing of our flights to our mine sites predominantly by charter. So it is enabling us to put in place checkpoints for workers getting onto aircraft and going to mine sites or to petroleum sites. So we are quite lucky in that respect, but and that's not consistent around the country, but here it is. So we do have checkpoints where we can test workers for temperature.
The main thing we've been hearing since this crisis began is that social distancing is the real key to beating this thing. So you think some people might find that a bit strange to imagine that even with checkpoints that workers are coming in from other parts of the country and being allowed to work on site. Couldn't that be a risk?
Well, look, social distancing is absolutely paramount, as is the health and safety of our people. That's our first priority, and it's important that our workers' health is paramount in the communities that they're working in, the contractors that they're working around. Social distancing measures are being incorporated around the country for the resources sector, limiting the number of people that can be in a mess having lunch, for instance, limiting the number of people that are on a bus transporting people from point A to point B. On planes, extra charter flights are being put on so that we can have less people in the plane. They are zigzagging on the plane. They are loading from back to front and from front to back. So there's an enormous number of social distancing precautions that are being put in place across the sector, in addition to all of those other precautionary measures such as washing hands, sanitisation, etc.
If, say, there is like a backflip and the government says, OK, we actually do need people, mining workers, to isolate for 2 weeks or have more extensive testing, I suppose, how do you think your organisation and the mining industry will react?
The industry is working on the inevitable outcome that things will be tightened. So we have an exemption at the moment. We're seen as an essential service to the state. Certainly in South Australia, the resources sector is employing over 26,000 people. We are delivering more than 50% of the state's exports. We are a significant economic powerhouse for the state, but we are also very mindful of the fact that this is a health, first and foremost, a health issue, and that the government needs to do whatever it can to keep South Australians safe. And that may well result in tighter restrictions, and we are working towards that inevitable outcome.
That's South Australia Chamber of Mines and Energy CEO Rebecca Knoll speaking there. Still to come, you're going to hear from the Australian Trucking Association because truckies are finding it difficult to access basic services while they try and bring us essential goods. It's coming up to 21 minutes to one. My name's Isabella Pittaway, and I'm asking you today, we've got a story about an Australian camel tour operator who returned home to find a surprise in their garden bed in Central Australia. A few people on the text line, Nick and Anonymous, both guessing Sturt Desert peas. Not that, but you are getting closer than a baby camel. Rob from St. Peter's has called in. Hi, Rob.
Hi, Isabella. How are you doing?
Not too bad, thanks. What do you think they found?
I reckon they've found a fully matured toilet paper tree.
Oh, they would have struck the jackpot there if that was the case, wouldn't they?
Big fruits of toilet paper all hanging off the branches like the spaghetti trees.
We need it to be growing off trees at the moment, don't we?
We do.
Rob, thank you very much for your guess. We've got another Rob who has called in, this time from the hills. Hi, Rob. How are you going?
Good afternoon. Now, I know exactly what was found in the garden, but you know that there's a special name for a one-hump camel. That's the Andromedan camel.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a special word for the two-hump camel. That's the Bactrian camel.
The what camel?
Bactrian. And there's a special word for the three-hump camel. That's Humphrey. And very unusual thing was found in the garden, Humphrey the camel.
Rob, if you've got a jar for dad jokes, I think you need to put something in that. Well done. Thank you for that one. That is Rob from the hills. Look, if you've got a better camel joke than Rob's, please feel free to let us know as well, although that one was a very good one. 1300 222 891. You can also text 0467 922 891. I will bring you the answer to that mystery very soon. But before then, the Australian Trucking Association says truck drivers need better access to restaurants and restrooms, which have been closed off because of coronavirus concerns. Truck drivers can no longer have a sit-down meal at eateries because of government restrictions, and they're also reporting that many roadhouse restrooms have been closed. Angus Verley spoke to Jeff Crouch, chair of the Australian Trucking Association, who says truck drivers need access to basic facilities.
Well, as you can quite reasonably understand, Angus, at the moment, there's a lot of nervous people out there in the community. And that has led to the unfortunate consequence where some of our interstate and local truck drivers that are going about their day-to-day business trying to move about the essential freight, the goods and services that we all need to maintain our lifestyle, are being denied access to basic facilities at some truck stops. Now, I stress that's not right across the board, but it is a worrying trend when interstate truck drivers can't even get access to basic facilities such as toilets and showers for the fear that other people have of catching COVID-19.
And at the moment, there is no reason, no legal reason why truck stops would have to close their showers and toilets?
No, there's not. I'm not aware of any reason that would be considered reasonable in these current circumstances. And it's not just the showers and the toilets. We've also got the issue whereby a lot of truck drivers rely upon the food courts and the takeaway facilities at roadhouses to be able to feed themselves whilst they're away for 2, 3, 4, sometimes 5 days at a time if they're on a particularly long haul. And with these takeaway places in the food courts shutting down, other bakeries and takeaway stores closing that normally within the immediate vicinity of a truck stop, that's causing some issues as well. And it's all well and good to have, I suppose, a KFC and McDonald's available still to do drive-through, but you can't take a prime mover and a set of trailers through a drive-through, and you can't walk into the drive-through as well.
And we have seen the government shut down those eating areas, so that is off limits. But do you think there should be an exemption, especially for truck drivers?
Look, the government's been very good so far, and that's state governments and federal government in ensuring and recognising that freight and logistics is considered to be an essential industry, and we've got the ability to continue to go out there and do what we need to do as far as supplying the goods and services that everyone so desperately needs at the moment. But what we will call for is for people that operate the service facilities, the ancillary services that truck drivers so desperately rely on to be able to go and do their job,
exercise some common sense, exercise the appropriate precautions, but also ensure that the facilities when they're available for that need to be available for truck drivers remain open.
And I've seen pictures on social media of truck drivers sort of eating a takeaway meal on the tailgate of their truck. So is that really not good enough?
Oh, look, truck drivers are a resilient bunch, and they recognise that they perhaps not be able to have every facility that they need, as do a lot of people in the community at the moment. Everyone's making sacrifices, everyone's hurting. But the main message I need to get across, that there are some basic humanitarian requirements, such as showers and such as toilets, and access to fresh, healthy food, that is absolutely critical for truck drivers to continue to do their job.
And is it particularly important at the moment when a lot of truck drivers are actually under extra pressure trying to keep up with some of this demand which has been spurred on by the panic buying that we've seen?
Yeah, look, the demand that I'm hearing from, in particular from companies supplying supermarkets and food suppliers, it's like the week before Christmas multiplied by two, and it's consistently right across the board. So most companies are working to their absolute capacity. There is pressure on the supply chain to be able to ensure that the goods continue to get through, and everyone's pitching in and working as hard as they possibly can to ensure that supply isn't interrupted.
That was Jeff Crouch, Chair of the Australian Trucking Association, speaking to Angus Verley. And one South Australian trucker has tweeted, "I'm all for controlling this virus, but surely a sit-down meal isn't out of the question for a truck driver. I hate to say it, but it's probably a fatigue management issue, if nothing else. Everyone wants their stuff, but no one gives a about who's delivering it." So, quite a concern there. Obviously, these truckies bringing us essential goods that we need at this time. A few more of your suggestions about what this camel operator came home to find in their garden bed. David from Stirling guessing a garden gnome, and David from Loxton suggesting mushrooms, which has also been a popular suggestion on the text line, as has pumpkins. Well, what was it? You'll find out next.
You're listening to The Country Hour on ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill.
It is 14 minutes to one this Friday, and to something a little bit different now. When Central Australian camel tour operator Julia Burke returned home from a holiday earlier this year, she discovered a mystery vine growing on her block just outside Alice Springs. Although she didn't know exactly what was growing, Julia was pretty confident her camel poo manured garden would produce something tasty. She told Jack Price she was pleasantly surprised when rock melons started to appear on the vine.
We went away over summer, and one of our camel tour guides, our camelier, was minding the house and running the camel tours for us, and she had eaten a rock melon from the Steiner School garden. And we capture all our wastewater in the sink, and then we tip the wastewater from a container in the sink into the vegetable garden to water the vegetable garden. And we believe that there must have been a rock melon seed in the water from the sink, and it then germinated in one of our garden beds and started to grow rock melons.
I'm holding one in my hand at the moment. It's a bit bigger than a tennis ball, a bit smaller than a soccer ball, somewhere in between. It's a cute little rock melon. How are they tasting?
They are so divine. We are eating them a little underripe because we've picked them early so they don't get eaten by birds or slugs. And the grasshoppers have attacked the leaves. They are very tasty. They have a great smell, and they are the most beautiful sunburnt orange.
Oh, I'd love to try one.
Sorry. We would hopefully, if we ever grow any more, Jack, we'll ask you back.
How many rock melons did you find in the garden from this little batch?
I haven't had a lot of luck growing melons because often I'm away in January and haven't been able to nurture my melon plants through. So I was very excited to see them, and I had built trellises for them, and I was hoping to get many more rock melons than four. We've had quite a few grasshoppers here, and they've attacked the leaves. So I am so grateful to our rock melon plant for giving us four rock melons, and it's just like eating a treasure.
Well, you've got plenty of space to grow them out here, and you're growing them with a special manure. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, we're lucky enough to have access to what we call camel lot, or maybe camel plop. Because we run a camel tour business, we have a small herd of camels that take visitors to Alice Springs and local families out on our camel tours within White Gum Station. And so we have a lot of camel poo. Camels tend to do between 20 and 40 plops per session. And on our camel yards, the camels do the work of squashing the poo. And then a few times a year, we have we scrape the yards, and then we pile up the camel poo. So the camel manure is actually a mixture of camel plop, some hay, some dirt scrapings, and it sits in the pile. And then when we want to renew our vegetable garden beds, we gather some of the camel plop, and depending on what stage we're at, we might put some soil in with it to increase the camel plop's water holding capacity, and we water it and use a good mulch, and then we'll plant our vegetable seedlings and seeds straight into the mix.
I would usually ask a grower what the trick is to growing their fruit, but it seems like you've lucked out on this occasion and haven't really had to do too much at all.
I don't know, Jack, if I would actually agree with you there, because our camel plop is the reason that we were able to grow these beautiful rock melon. And because we keep our water from our washing up, we were able to reuse that, and the beautiful sun we have here. So I think that as a grower, even if I'm a first-time grower and I only got four rock melon, that a mixture of love, sun, Alice Springs soil mixed with camel plop, and a good amount of recycled water, that's the way to grow a rock melon in Alice Springs.
Yeah, that's Julia Burke. She's one of the owners of Pinden Camel Trucks down in Alice Springs. So there you go. If any of you out there guessed rock melon, well done. And there you go, another new name for manure now. You can just call it plop. It is 8:01.
Coronavirus is most likely to spread from person to person when we come into close contact with one another. We can all help stop the spread by keeping our distance. No shaking hands, no hugs, no touching, and try to stay 1.5 metres away from others. It's also important to practice good hygiene, especially after being in public places. Together, we can help stop the spread and stay healthy. Go to health.gov.au or abc.net.au/coronavirus.
You're listening to The Country Hour on ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill.
Now, we were expecting the Prime Minister to address the nation following a cabinet meeting, but he hasn't appeared yet. But when he does, the ABC will bring that to you and the latest information on the coronavirus. Now, while many industries are affected by closures and job losses, Macro Group Australia is expanding its operations. The group produce wild boar, kangaroo and venison meat and is soon to start building an additional 20 chiller boxes in New South Wales to store kangaroos. Managing Director Ray Border told Saskia Mabin there's a good chance consumers will be more interested in their products amid shorter supply of other options.
I think we're just trying to be very positive about it. We think the market is still strong, and indeed it has been strong over the last, I'd say, 12 months, and we've chosen to be very positive and start to build state-of-the-art chiller sites and put it out there for anybody who wants to get back into the industry or who is already in the industry and give them a bit of confidence, or in new people for that want to get involved. So really it's about being positive.
So where does the ability for you to do this come from? Is there more kangaroo meat now around, or, you know, is there some other factors that have led you to expanding?
I just think that right now we've gone through a drought over the last few years, which really highlighted the fact that we probably didn't have the infrastructure in place to cope with it. And even though the numbers aren't high right now, what we're thinking is just that give it a couple of years and a couple of good seasons, you know, we could be faced with these numbers again. And we just want to have the infrastructure in place just to make sure that landowners and total grazing pressure is we can handle it all and do what our job is required, and that is to keep the numbers under control.
So you're building 20 new chiller boxes. Where will these be?
Mostly through New South Wales, and even though some of the areas have been closed for shooting kangaroos around Broken Hill, we feel those numbers will come back. And so it'll be from all around Broken Hill, the north, west, all through New South Wales, basically.
I'm interested to know if the border closures that are happening now across the country might have any impact on your operations. I know agriculture is still considered a key industry and livestock can still move between borders. Is that something that's a concern to you, or will that change how you operate at all?
Well, it is a little bit of a concern because every state is different. You know, we've done what we can to make sure that there is no interruption. This afternoon I'll be speaking to Minister Simon Birmingham, and I'll be bringing that up. And we're speaking to the government as much as we can. We don't see it's a problem. We just want to make sure there's no confusion, because obviously that will have a problem as far as setting all these chillers up, because as I believe, it's anything that has to do with the essential service, and of course food is an essential service, and getting your chiller boxes set up and well maintained as a part of that. So that's what we believe. So hopefully we can make sure there's no confusion about that, because otherwise that'll slow us down.
It sounds to me like you building these chiller boxes might open up some job opportunities, and with many people losing jobs, with different industries being quite severely affected by closures, do you think there'll be a lot of potential for you to be hiring people who are now out of a job?
We're actively looking for people to get involved in the processing, through to our lab, which is, you know, we have scientists that work for us, and then also QA, people in the field, process workers. We're actively looking for people. So even though it's a really sad situation, I think that with food, we're at the better end of it, and we just need to make sure we can process everything we're producing. So, yes, there's winners and there's losers, and, you know, we just want to help out where we can.
Mm. What type of measures has Macro Meats introduced to, I guess, limit the spread of COVID-19 and protect your staff?
We've acted fairly quickly. We've installed thermo cameras. We're almost like an airport now. You walk through an area, and if there's any elevated temperatures, it'll come up on a screen, and then we will bring that person aside, send them home, get them to get a clearance from their doctor. Besides that, several times a day we're taking temperatures. We've got sanitizer everywhere. We've employed more people to make sure that we've got this distancing adhered to. We've split shifts so that we've got less people working at the same time. We're actually taking every single precaution that we can. We're not allowing any visitors on site. We're not allowing any sales reps on site. So we've really taken this very, very seriously, because the last thing we want is a detection.
That is the Managing Director of Macro Group Australia, Ray Border, speaking to Saskia Mabon. Happy Friday, Sonia.
Happy Friday to you, Isabella. We are going, of course, we are all waiting for the Prime Minister's press conference today and the following one from the Premier, Stephen Marshall. So we will be trying to bring that to you when it happens. It's been delayed at this point, but we will do that as soon as we can. Also, we'll be speaking with SA Health because, as we know, they are getting increasing numbers of reports. In fact, they describe it as a large number of reports to police about people who are breaking isolation or quarantine. And we'll talk about the measures that they're doing to enforce those things. And driveway dinner and drinks. Will it be a thing this weekend? It will if we've got something to say about it. So join us in trying to get that happening.
I mean, thanks, Sonia. And thank you for your company this week. Stay safe and have a good weekend. It's news time, 1 o'clock.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.